This is from the boardroom, the governance cut of the post-which agent bricked prod.
At the governance level, every action taken by an agent has to answer just two questions: whose authority is being exercised, and which specific agent exercised it. If you can't answer both from your authoritative logs alone, your auditability claim is fiction.
If you want the wiring, token claims, constrained delegation, the bench level fixes, listen to the bench cut. This one is for the audit committee. Marcus, you start the post by saying that identity is the control plane. For a board member or a CISO, why is the agent specifically where that control plane is currently failing?
Because we've spent 20 years perfecting the front door. We know how to sign a user in. But an agent isn't just a user. It's a middleman with its own set of keys. The moment that agent takes an action, there is a massive temptation to launder the identity. We let the agent act with its own broad service credentials while still putting the user's name on the audit log. It looks clean on the surface, but behind the curtain, you've just bypassed every least privilege control you've ever written.
You call that laundering. In an audit context, like a SOC-style internal control attestation, what does that actually look like?
It looks like a user-initiated action that is actually carried out with non-user power. If an agent does something the human driving it could not do directly, but the books still say the human did it, your role model is void. You've created a way around every permission gate in the company. From a governance perspective, that's not an efficiency gain. It's an open finding.
Let's talk about the front door for a second. You mentioned that sign-in is basically a solved problem. We have OIDC, we have Entra, we have EasyAuth. Why isn't that enough?
Because the token that gets you through the front door isn't a master key for everything downstream. To call the next API, the app needs to exchange that token. In the industry, we call this the on-behalf-of flow, or OBO. It's the gold standard because it preserves the user's identity through the hop, but it's hard to do right. If the developer gets lazy and just uses a generic application permission, essentially a skeleton key for the app, the user vanishes. The downstream system just sees the app acting. That's where the first audit trail breaks.
And you argue that these application permissions have a legitimate place, but they're being misused.
Exactly. If it's a nightly reconciliation job that no user touched, an app-only credential is correct. But if a user clicks a button and the agent uses its own God mode secret to execute it, you've lost the on whose behalf half of the equation. You can no longer prove who authorized the change.
What happens when we go deeper? Most enterprise architectures aren't just two apps, it's a chain.
That's the hop nobody plans for. Carrying a user's identity across one hop is a standard feature. Carrying it across three or four is a project. Entra does support it, but it gets brittle very fast. You hit audience mismatches, consent issues, and conditional access challenges. So teams reach for the client secret again. They terminate the user-bound chain and replace it with a service account. By the time you get to the third or fourth system, the original user is a ghost.
You mentioned RFC 8693 as a standard for this. Why isn't that the get-out-of-jail-free card?
It's a beautiful standard on paper. It allows a token to say, this is Alice's authority, exercised by Agent X. It carries the actor chain. But in reality, it's rarely deployed that way. Most Entra environments don't give you that full chain in a downstream token. You might see the immediate caller, but you lose the history. If you're investigating a breach, the incident response team doesn't just want to know who the last caller was. They want the whole path. Without that standard, you're back to manual log correlation across systems that might not even share a clock.
There's a governance failure mode you call trust drift. This feels like something an audit committee would miss entirely during a standard review.
It's the most underappreciated risk in the stack. When you grant consent to an app, you're consenting to scopes like read email. You sign off on it because the app is well-behaved. But 6 months later, that app adds an AI agent. Now, that agent uses your read email scope to fan out data to a dozen other systems. The scope didn't change, but the behavior did. There is no alert in your identity provider that fires when an app's internal logic grows more aggressive. Your annual app consent review says status quo, while your actual risk exposure has tripled.
Let's move to the basement of the enterprise, hybrid identity and Active Directory. If we're still using Kerberos on-prem, can the agent survive that trip?
Only if you're willing to do the hard work. The lazy way is to use one God mode service account for everything on-prem. That collapses the identity into one single unauditable point. The right way involves constrained delegation, those S4U protocols. It's a bridge that allows the cloud service to impersonate the AD user to a specific backend. But it's brittle. It requires perfectly aligned UPNs and a heavy lift in identity plumbing. Most teams skip it. They treat the on-prem gap as a known issue and move on. But that means your most critical directory actions are being taken by an agent using a shared password.
You also flagged KeyCloak and brokering as a governance concern.
KeyCloak is often the legacy corner nobody wants to touch. When you broker an Entra login into KeyCloak, there's a mapping layer. If that mapping is sloppy, it can launder privilege. It can take a low-privilege Entra group and map it to a high-privilege KeyCloak role. Suddenly, the user has more power in the legacy system than they do in the cloud. That mapping layer needs to be in scope for every governance review, but it often falls through the cracks between the cloud team and the legacy team.
Let's talk about the low-code explosion, Copilot Studio, Power Automate, and the RAG pattern, Retrieval Augmented Generation. This seems to be where the governance risk hits the legal department.
This is the big one. The RAG pattern usually involves crawling sources like SharePoint or Jira and putting them into a searchable index for the AI. The problem is that the original access controls, the ACLs, are often left behind. Most DIY builds create a flat index. If I can talk to the agent, I can see everything the crawler saw.
And that's where you see the shadow RAG corpus.
Exactly. Your CISO thinks Microsoft Purview or Priva is protecting your sensitive data, but those tools look at the original source. They don't see the Azure AI search index you just built. If a user files a DSAR, a data subject access request, or if there's a legal hold, your compliance team won't find the data sitting in that AI index. It's a blind spot. And for a GDPR-regulated firm, that shadow copy of personal data, with all the ACL stripped off, represents a massive liability, up to 4% of global turnover. That's a boardroom-level number.
And then there's the right side, when these low-code agents start taking actions.
We see maker identity everywhere. A business user builds an agent and pastes in their own personal access token, a PAT. Now, every action that agent takes looks like that one person. If the agent makes a mistake, the audit log blames the maker, not the person who triggered it. It's the ultimate collapse of non-repudiation.
You take this even further, down to the shop floor or OT systems. For a manufacturing company, this is about physical risk.
This is where the AI roadmap gets real. The board wants AI to optimize the margin, the line, the batch, the recipe. That means connecting agents to systems that physically move. But the protocols at that tier, like Modbus, often have no concept of identity at all. They were designed for air-gapped networks, not for IT-style delegation. If you point an LLM-driven actor at a factory floor through a shared credential, you have no way to prove who authorized a set point change. If a batch is ruined, or worse, if someone is hurt, your authoritative logs will just show a generic service account. You've lost the chain of command at the exact moment it matters most.
Why hasn't this blown up yet? We have thousands of these agents in production.
Compartmentalization. So far, the accidents have been small because the agents don't talk to each other yet. They're siloed. But the business case for agent-to-agent, or A2A, is too strong to ignore. The onboarding agent calling the payroll agent calling the facilities agent, it's the holy grail of efficiency. Commercial pressure will push that into production long before we have the governance controls to audit it.
And that's where the lateral movement happens.
Precisely. If one agent is breached, the attacker doesn't need a malware payload. They just need to make polite rest calls to the next agent. Because none of these agents carry a faithful actor chain, the system at the end of the line has no idea it's the seventh hop of an attack. It just thinks it's a legitimate internal request.
You ended the post with a vignette about an agent bricking prod. Can you walk us through that from a boardroom perspective?
That brings us back to the bar for part one. What is the one thing the listener should take to the audit committee?
If you cannot show from your own authoritative logs both whose authority was used and which specific agent used it, then you don't have an identity program. You just have a collection of shared accounts with an LLM on top.
Marcus, thank you. For the wire-level version of every collapse we just named, from token claims to constrained delegation, the bench cut is the one to play. This is From the Boardroom.